Today I will speak about another theoretical approach. It is called heavy quark expansion, and it deals with intrusive decays. And I will mainly talk about the application to B2C and then I will give some more general remarks on other applications, heavy quark expansion. So the main motivation is to look at the charge current three-level decays shown here, and to extract information on the CKM matrix elements VUB and also VCB. And this heavy quark expansion deals with the inclusive decays. So the final state is not a particular meson, but it is just characterized by some property. So here it is either a state that contains only a single charm quark or a single up quark. And then it can be accompanied by some other degrees of freedom. So the branching fraction or the decay width in this heavy quark expansion will turn out it is proportional again to the CKM squared. And then the leading contribution is given by the free quark decay, the decay of a free quark. And then there are corrections that can be a higher order in QCD and also suppressed by 1/1 the heavy quark mass. So it is theoretically, it is completely different from exclusive decays where we need to know the form factors for a particular exclusive transition. And so it is complementary, has different theoretical uncertainties, but for the experiment it is usually more difficult because there are maybe higher backgrounds in this inclusive measurement. And just to remind you, other alternatives I have talked about in the last lecture were the leptonic decays and the exclusive semi-leptonic decays. Okay, so let us look on B2C NU. And what we are interested in is a B meson, a B meson that decays into some final hadronic state that contains a charm. So this state can contain a D meson or a D pi, D and several pi, a D star, and so on. And then there will be also a lepton and a neutrino pair. And this Q is the momentum transfer, and it is also the lepton invariant mass. So the differential decay distribution can be written with respect to Q squared, the electron energy, and also the neutrino energy. The latter is usually not observed, but let us keep it for the moment. And this differential decay rate is just simply given by the matrix element square by summing over all the lepton spins, by summing over all the inclusive final states that can appear. And one can parameterize it in this form with some structure functions W1, 2, 3. And these structure functions, they are related to this matrix element squared in the following way. So I will try to explain this in the following. This matrix element squared contains the effective Lagrangian. And if you remember, our operator had a quark current and a lepton current. So for the lepton current squared, we can just pull it out if we work at leading order in QD, and we can perform the sum over the spins. And then we will just use the usual rules for spin sums of spinors, and we can solve them with traces. And this will give the leptonic tensor just in terms of the final moment of the lepton and the neutrino. And since we worked in yielding order QED, we could factorize the leptonic part. Now the hadronic part stayed here. So this was a quark current. It is written here, has this C bar, gamma mu P left, and the B quark. And for this part here, we don't know this transition matrix elements because they involve the hadronic states, but we can parametrize it in terms of the momentum transfer and the heavy quark. So there are two momenta here, the momentum of the B meson, and usually we rewrite it as MB times V, so that's why the V is here. And the other momentum is the transfer to the leptons, which is the Q. So we can parametrize it in this Lorentz invariant way in terms of these structure functions. And with this expression, we can just go and perform the phase space integration. And then we can multiply the result with the, we can contract it with the leptonic tensor, and we will arrive at this expression which is shown here. So what we're interested in, we would like to calculate these scalar functions W, and they depend on the Q squared and V dot Q, which is just the scalar product of the B meson momentum with Q. And if we work later on in the B meson rest frame, it is just V dot Q. And V in the B meson rest frame is just, it has a one in the temporal component and the spatial components are just zero. So V dot Q is just the zero component of Q. But I will come back to that later also. So we want to calculate this W. And then it always goes in theory, oh, let's look at this other quantity and see how it is related to what we are interested in. So this other quantity is here, this T alpha beta. It is a matrix element of B bar going to B of a time ordered product of the currents that appeared in our operator. So this is the C bar B current. And it is just a Fourier transform. And what we can do, we can insert here a complete set of states that have the appropriate quantum numbers. So they have an overlap with this operator. And what we see is that this time-ordered product, it has two contributions. Like each time-ordered product, the one when the x0 is larger than zero, it just keeps the ordering of J dagger J. And then we can insert a complete set of states. And this complete set of states, it can only contain a single charm quark, because this current here, it has a B quark that destroys the B meson. Then the charm quark must create something, so it must have some overlap with some state, so it can be only a state with a single charm. That's why we can only insert here states with single charms. And then this time-ordered product has also a second term where this time component is negative. So it the order of these two operators is reversed. So the J dagger ends up here and the J here. And what happens in this case is that the intermediate states, this operator J dagger, it contains a C B bar. So the B bar operator cannot destroy the B meson. So the B meson rests, but the B bar will create another B meson. So it must contain two B mesons or B quarks in this case. And then the C will also create an anti-charm in the outgoing state. So these set of states must contain always two B quarks and an anti-charm quark. All right, and then, yes, this theta function just comes from the time ordered product. So, and what we see already here, this is close to what we had before. Just we have this current at the position x and not at zero. And we can just use this trick and replace it by the current at zero. So we get this momentum operator here in the exponential. And when we apply them, We get the momentum of the meson, and we get the momentum of the final charm state. And so we can combine this e to the ipvx and e to the minus ipx with this one here. And now we can try to perform the x integration. And we can do it for the spatial components, because there's no theta function in the spatial components. And it will simply give us this three-dimensional delta function. And if we try to do it for the temporal component, for the zero component, then we have to take care of the theta function. So it will bring the integral from zero to infinity instead from minus infinity to infinity. And for this reason, we have this additional numerator here. And it's only in the temporal components. So that's why the energy of the charm state appears here, and also Q0. Okay. And we can do the similar thing for the second term. Now it's a bit reversed, because we have the x dependence here in the second term, in the second factor. And this brings out then the momentum of the B meson with e to the minus. So that's why we have a minus sign in front of a B. And then it brings out the momentum of this C bar BB state. So that's why we have this energy appearing here. And also here in this three-dimensional delta function, we get now a minus sign. All right. So far, so good. And what we see in the first term, in the numerator, we already have something that resembles very much our W alpha beta. No? Just have a look. The W alpha beta was given by this. So the delta function, we also have partially, here it's still, here it's four-dimensional. Here it's only the three-dimensional part. But we will see what we can do with that. So if we look at this, then now these are local currents. So they really just depend on the momentum transfer Q squared, which is just a scalar number. And they don't depend anymore on Q naught. Okay, so the only Q naught dependence is here in the denominator. And we can have a look where this becomes singular. So there is a cut for the first term along the real Q naught axis. So if you go in the plane of Q naught and assume it's a complex number, then on the real axis of Q naught, we have a cut if Q naught, yeah, as long as this relation is fulfilled. So you can see that this the maximal value here can be arise if this the spatial Q squared is zero, and then it is just given by the mass of the lightest charm state that we have. So this cut extends up to MB minus MD that we can see here. And then the second term has also a cut, but now this cut is along the positive real axis up to infinity, and it starts there for Q squared equals zero for this one, for the lowest mass of this C bar BB state. So this is twice the B meson mass, and then we can have a D mass. So if we put that in here, so we get something roughly between this. There's a cut on the left side and a cut on the right side, and they are separated roughly by two times MD. Not exactly, but roughly, because of the square root here. And this is larger compared to lambda QCD. So what we can do, we can try to integrate this expression over Q naught, and then we will stay with W alpha beta we are interested in. Here I show you again this cuts that I just talked about in this Q naught plane. So we have this left hand cut from the charm states, and we have this right on this cut on the right side from the C bar B B states.
Sorry, Christoph.
Yes.
Just repeat once more how you get the MB plus MD, the right hand cut.
It's approximately, I'm sorry. So here there would be 2MB plus MD square root minus MB. I'm approximated. So this is not really correct.
Yeah, sure. Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Yes. So, yes, we have to do perform this integration. And if you just look at this, it you can use this formula. We have this kind of numerator, yes. Omega is our Q naught. Then we have something there, and some I epsilon prescription. And by performing the integral over Q omega here in this case, we can replace it by something that is real, and we have to use the principal value prescription. That means when we integrate over omega, we have this pole position here. We have to take the limit from the left side to the pole and from the right side to the pole in the same way. This is the principal value prescription, how to evaluate these kind of integrals. And then we get this other imaginary part, which is given by P times this delta function. So if we integrate over this, it will just give you the what is in the numerator, actually. So if we use this on this expression, and we just look at the part of the delta function, it will pick us out the sum of the charm and the numerator and this delta function here. So, and this is written here. By doing this integral, we get this delta function. Yes. With a factor of I. And the rest of the integral is real. So if we just pick out the imaginary part of this integral, then we get this expression for the charm parts, and then there's another expression equivalently for the C bar BB parts. And this is exactly our W, but integrated over Q naught. So we have the integrated version of QW as the imaginary part of the integrated version of this T alpha beta. All right, so we integrate along this contour here, the upper one, for example. But since this T alpha beta obeys this Schwarz reflection principle, so if you evaluate T at the complex conjugate part, then it's just minus. We can integrate actually over this part and divide by 2 and have the same result. And instead of integrating along this contour close to the cut, we could also integrate over the other contour in black here and we would get the same result. And because of the analyticity of this function, so there are no poles in this region here. And yes. Okay. Now also what happens if we integrate over this cut, the Q squared value is always such that in this part with the C bar BB terms, this delta function is never fulfilled. So these parts drop out when we integrate over this contour here. And what it effectively does, we replace this threefold differential rate by the twofold one by integrating over the neutrino energy. All right. So now we have found a way to calculate the W's in terms of this T. Yes, this is also what I just explained here. And what this actually is, it is the optical theorem at work on this Q squared differential level. As I said, we can also calculate the integrated T alpha beta over the black contour. And this is a way we stay kind of away from bound states that exist here. All right. And this lends itself to performing an operator product expansion when we, before integrating along this black contour of this object T alpha beta. So if you look back, the T alpha beta was just this time ordered product of these both currents. And we now we just calculate it and see that it can be approximated by an operator product expansion with some operators that have some Wilson coefficient. So this is depicted here. So if we just work at lowest order in alpha s, just at tree level, we can calculate the time ordered product. So just remember, this current sits at zero, so it has a B coming in. Then there's momentum transfer emitted. Then there's a charm quark. The charm quark appears also in this current here at position X. So we just use Wick theorem to contract it to this charm quark propagator. This is given here. And then at X, we have the second vertex here with an outgoing B and then some momentum transfer. So this is written here. These are just the Feynman rules at Parton level. And I call it therefore small T alpha beta. And the vertex here, gamma alpha P left, comes from here. And the other one comes from this current. Now, I just move the P left to this side here. So each time you move this projector P left through a gamma matrix, it becomes P right. So here we move it through PB slash, so it becomes P right. Then we move it through gamma beta, it becomes P left again. And P left, so P left squared is just P left itself. And if we do it with the charm mass, we move P left through the charm mass, it just stays P left, but then we commute it with gamma beta, it becomes P right. So the charm mass here is projected out. This is why it does not appear here anymore. And I have also rewritten this momentum PB as MB times V plus K. And K is just the residual momentum of the heavy quark. So this brings me to the second expression. And now we can try to simplify, we can go on and simplify it. We just want to expand to lowest order in K over MB. So we just set K to zero. And then we call the denominator delta so that we have factored it out. And if you look at the Dirac structure here, so it is just the product of three gamma matrices, gamma alpha, some gamma contracted with momenta, and gamma beta. And for this one, you can use the Chisholm identity. So we just project it on a single gamma matrix with some metric tensor and the Levi-Civita tensor. So these are these four terms that arise from this Chisholm identity. And now you can go on and we cannot really further simplify this. And we can take a hadronic matrix element of this expression. So we want to calculate now T alpha, capital T alpha beta, which is just a small one divided by 2MB. The 2MB I had here, the definition up here. So I put them back there. So, and if we look here, the only Dirac structures that arise are either a single gamma matrix, like here, or a gamma matrix with gamma 5, like here. And by parity, the second matrix element is zero. And yes, and then we can just go on and try to rewrite the whole expression, I'm sorry, using this matrix element. And if you do that, this is the result that we get. So there are several terms here that depend just on V and Q. And we can also introduce for this T some Lorentz covariant decomposition with some scalar functions T1, T2, T3. So we can just read them off here. We have calculated them at tree level, at lowest order in alpha S, and at lowest order in the expansion in K. And this is the result, if you just take it over. And yes, in the following, I just want to rewrite the numerator a bit. So the numerator, remember this was this delta. Yes, and I just expand the square here. So I have Q squared, I have MB squared, and I have M charm squared. And then I pull out from the mixed term MB V dot Q minus V dot Q. I pull out the two MB. And so I end up with this one. And now I can try to do the Q naught integration. What happens in this Q naught integration is that if you have a 1 over delta, you just have to replace it by EI times pi times the delta over this. Okay, so I just apply, let us go back. I just apply this formula and just pick out this last term before the integration over Q naught. So if we just do that, we remember the W's are just minus 1 over pi, the imaginary part of Ti. So the imaginary part takes away this I. The pi and the pi cancel, and the minus and the minus cancel. So you can really read off from the T1, now the W's. And before Q naught integration, they have these delta functions, so they are distributions. And after Q naught integration, they're just normal functions. I'm sorry. So what we have done, we have calculated these W's, we can go on and do the integration of the electron neutrino for this threefold differential rate, and we have a result for our differential distribution. And we can see that at leading order, this result is just the decay of a free equal. This is what I said in the beginning. And what this approach gives us is a way of how we can systematically improve this and go to higher orders in both in alpha S and lambda QCD. So just let me go back one. We just have to go at this point here. We can either, when we expand, we can keep higher powers in K. So this would be the expansion in lambda over MB. And what we also can do, we can add QCD corrections. So we can exchange gluons here or here, and we can do that at higher orders. And all these effects then will end up in this Wilson coefficient, or the W's in our case. Okay, so after we found that the tree level gives us the free B quark decay, let us have a look what would be the first order power corrections. So we just go back to the small T alpha beta on this last slides, and I just have kept the K here. And I just rewrite it a bit to have the delta I pull out. So I expand just the square here. This will give me the delta, this mixed term, and the K squared. And now we can have a look what happens if we keep the first order terms in K, which would be the subleading corrections. So we expand this to first order in K, and I don't show here the tree level, the zero order term, just the first order term. So we get one from k slash divided over delta. This is this part. And then we get the second one term if we expand the denominator from here, multiplied with this part. This is the second term. And now you can see already that these are dimension four operators. So we have b bar and b give you dimension three, and then we have this additional momentum here, which gives dimension four. And if we think about the HQET, before I did not go explicitly to HQET, but if you think in HQET fields and operators, that would be this additional k dependence in the in momentum space. In position space, it would be given by some covariant derivative. So if we write down this kind of dimension four operators with a covariant derivative, they will give us in position space with Feynman rules a k. So now again, we can take a hadronic matrix elements of this expression, and we can use the Chisholm identity to reduce this product of three gamma matrices. And what we will end up with is this kind of operators, yes? With a single gamma matrix and with this covariant derivative. Now, if we have a gamma with a gamma 5, then this vanishes again by parity. If we have only a gamma alpha with a covariant derivative, we can use this projection equation that is valid for the heavy quark field. And we can pull out the V slash here, and we can pull out the V slash here. And then if you do some manipulations, we see that it is equivalent to having just V alpha times this operator. So the matrix element of this operator can just depend on V alpha times some scalar function. And if we contract now with V alpha, then we see that it becomes this equation, that X is simply given by the matrix element of this operator. And here we can use the equation of motion of HQET, where this is just, this was the leading order, the leading power term in the Lagrangian of HQET. If you remember the other lecture, it is given by this. So if you derive the equation of motion, you will find that V dot D applied on this heavy quark field is just zero. So what we find is that this matrix element is also zero. And for this reason, at the order of lambda QCD over MB, we don't have corrections to the inclusive decay rate. So the first corrections would come in if you go to order at k squared. So now we should expand this expression to order k squared over MB. And then there will be the first dimension five operators that have matrix elements that will not vanish. And if you remember this L2 Lagrangian, it had two operators. So we will find that there will be two matrix elements that do not vanish. So what is important here, also in the inclusive decay, in principle, there are no lambda over MB corrections. The first subleading corrections come in at lambda over MB squared. Oh, I'm sorry, there's a question, please.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I had one question on the slide of your contour.
Yes.
Can you... Previous one? Yeah, so here I assume that this region where you say is the resonance, this is the JPSI resonance? Where you write greater than lambda QCD. So when one computes this T alpha beta, is it computed along the blue plus red contour, right? Rather than the black one? Because I don't understand how the black one is away from the resonance.
I'm sorry, With resonances, I mean bound states. I'm sorry. So if you're closed here, you're close to the bound states.
Okay.
And then you need to know practically these matrix elements for the bound states. But if you go away from that, you're in a region where you're not so close to the bound states, and then you think that you can do this you can evaluate this expression just by using partonic states, as I do now, as I did here. Yes.
Okay. And on the next slide, do you ignore, I guess you ignore MC in the numerator, right?
This I explained. When you try to bring this P left to this side, you change it, it commute with MC, it stays P left, and then you have to commute it with this gamma beta, and then it becomes a P right right projector, and P right times P left is zero. So it vanishes strictly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
I also have a couple of questions. So the a bit later on, you say that it's like the free B quark decay. Yes. It's because MC doesn't enter in the expressions.
MC?
Yeah, no, why do you say that it's the decay of a free B quark?
Because you just later on you just use these delta functions, and
Now I understand what you mean. Okay, but I have one more question. Yeah, here I'm being really stupid, but how do you go from this blue to the orange, the one of a delta?
I'm sorry, from where to where? From the gray
delta,
to the...
When you do delta in blue, to go to the one of a delta in orange.
Oh, here I just rewrite the denominator. Because I want to bring it... You see, this is T1, it depends on Q and Q naught.
Yes.
And then I want to... We'll use this relation... this part of this relation to perform the Q naught integration?
Yes.
But so under the integral, you can replace this by this before the Q naught integration.
Right.
And then you just keep the second term, which gives you the imaginary part.
Sure. Okay, I got it. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I rewrite the numerator in this form to have omega. Yes.
So then I call replacement. Yeah, okay.
So this is omega and this is omega prime, and then...
Yes, I get it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are there more questions? Shireen?
Yeah?
You still have another question?
No, somehow the raised hand is not...
Yeah, I can do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we stopped here where we considered this lambda over MB, the first lambda over MB corrections, and we found that they are zero. And yes, so this is more or less all I wanted to say about how these inclusive decays are treated. So the technical part is kind of over. And now we can apply this. So for example, we can use W1, W2, and W3, and we can calculate the differential decay rate, and we can even integrate over Q squared and the lepton mass at the electron energy, and we get the total width, for example. And then it has this form, yes? So just to remind you, the charm mass is here in this Q star. So here's the Q star, is the charm mass. So when we integrate over Q naught square, then the charm mass will come into the differential decay rate. So, and in the end, it pendants looks like this. And what is important, so this is to leading order in 1 over MB and to leading order in alpha S. So this is what you would have obtained if you just would work with three quarks. And you get this factor MB to the fifth. So the question that arises in this point is which value we should use, which numerical value. And since it's a free quark, one would just think one should use the pole mass. But we don't have a really good handle on the pole mass. We don't have an observable, which really depends on the pole mass, so that we could extract the pole mass from this observable. And if we try to relate the pole mass to some other renormalization scheme, the MS bar mass, for example, then one sees that there's a thing in the series expansion that is called renormalin issue, so that this series is not really well behaved. So it does not converge. So I don't want to go into the details. So what you maybe just think of here is that we cannot calculate the pole mass well from, for example, the MS bar mass that we know well. And what also was realized with under close investigation of QCD corrections to this, that the same renormalin issue also appears in the decay rate itself, so when we calculate alpha S corrections. And then it was also realized that both issues are this cancel. So in principle, it would not be there if we knew the pole mass. So what people resorted to is to look at other observables that also depend on pole mass or some other scheme of the B quark mass. And these are higher moments in the lepton energy. So these moments we can calculate in the same way from the differential distribution as done for the differential decay rates before. And also higher moments in the invariant mass of this hadronic state. And for this reason, in practical applications, when we try to fit BCB from inclusive B to C measurements, we have to consider also these other observables. Okay, so this is, yes, in practice, things are more complicated than what I have shown you before. All right, so with this in mind, just here is the status of the extraction of VCB from B to inclusive char. There are many corrections that have been calculated to the decay bits and also to the moments in the lepton energy in the hadronic mass. And as you have seen, we can do this double expansion in alpha S and lambda over MB. So what is known is the tree level. This is what we have kind of calculated ourselves. And then there are known the QCD corrections to first order and second order. And then we have seen there are no lambda over MB corrections, so they come in first at lambda over MB squared. And as I anticipated a bit, there are two of them because we have two matrix elements in the HQET Lagrangian net disorder. So the first one is the hadronic parameter that is associated with this matrix element is called mu pi squared. And the other one is called mu g squared. So we have these two terms. And for these two terms, people also calculated the alpha S corrections. And then to the order three, there are further terms. And they also depend on some matrix elements. And the according parameters are called rho d cubed. This is called also Darwin term. And then there's also this rho cubed ls. And beyond that, there are, of course, higher order corrections that can be also included. And what people also studied is the dependence on this dimension 7 and 8. So that would be 1 over mq to the 4th or 5th. And here there are many, many more matrix elements. And we don't know them so well. And the effect has been estimated to be of the order of 1.3%. So we can use this expression and we can use data and try to extract VCB and simultaneously fit also the B and the chunk quark mass and also these hadronic parameters that appear there. And what is known are the total and partial width and also moments measured by Babar, Bell, Clio, Delphi, and CDF. And this analysis has been done by Paolo Gambini and his collaborators. And they also included to see the effect, also the higher dimensional matrix elements with some assumptions on their size. They don't use the Polmar scheme for the bottom quark mass, but something that is called kinetic scheme. And then they use for the charm mass the Ms-Bauer scheme. And there they also use some information that is known on the charm mass. So the lattice, for example, calculates the charm mass. And they use this input here. Also on this, one of these mu g squared, it is related to the hyperfine splitting of Mb star minus Mb. So this is also measured. And this is can also be used as information on this in the fit. So they do this fit of all this data with this parameters. And when they do not include this higher order effects, they get this kind of numbers with uncertainties in the first line row. And then if they include them, there are some small changes. So in particular, on mu p, nothing is known a priori, so we determine it mostly from the fit, and then it depends a bit on this higher order. And also here, this Darwin term depends a bit on these higher order things. In principle, the lattice can calculate these matrix elements because they are local operators of a B going to a B. So it is hoped that lattice can contribute something to this analysis. And so the authors get these values of VCB. And what they did then further, they also used information from the lattice on the B quark mass. So the lattice calculates the B quark mass in the Ms-Bauer scheme, but then one can relate it to the kinetic scheme. And if they include this information, they can even reduce a bit further the uncertainty. So this value of VCB from inclusive determinations includes also this external input on the B quark mass. So yes, this was the main motivation for this lecture, to show you that we have this inclusive method to extract VCB. And currently it gives the most precise value of VCB. And the uncertainties that the hadronic parameters that enter this analysis, they are completely different from the hadronic parameters that we need in exclusive decays. There we need to understand the form factors. And here we need to understand these matrix elements of local operators that describe B going to B meson. So with this, I would like to conclude the discussion of this B to charm inclusive story. If you have some questions on this part, please.
Yeah, I have some questions, so I can't raise my hand. So one question. So you had just said.
Hello?
And even the CMAS. These guys don't do either. I mean, do they allow a large uncertainty in going from the Ms-Bauer scheme to the kinetic scheme?
I don't think so, that there are large uncertainties.
They so then they're not really fitting it at all, no?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
So they're not really fitting MB or MB at all.
I think. I cannot really answer you why they try to fit the B quark mass.
Mm.
I think the very precise predictions from the letters from the B quark mass, they're only from the last couple of years. But when they started this analysis, you can see in 2014 or earlier, maybe not such information was available from the letters.
Mm.
And also, this analysis is also already 4 years old. So maybe meanwhile, it's not really necessary to fit the B quark mass. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you still can keep it as a fit parameter, as a nuisance parameter on which you have some prior knowledge.
Mm. Yeah. But other people really fit the B mass in the pole scheme, as the pole mass.
I think it's not of use to relate to the pole mass, because when you try to convert it to the pole mass, the series is not convergent.
No, I mean just to keep it from first print. I mean to keep it as the pole mass, and then to not have any prior information, and then to fit it. Because as you say, you can relate it to other observables. And I mean, what you said on the last slide seemed to make sense to me, but that's not at all what they're doing here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there other questions? So I will just continue. So in the remaining couple of minutes, I would just give some more general remarks on heavy quark expansion. So what actually is behind this, if we just focus on the total inclusive rate. So before I really went through the differential decay width, but here this is about the total inclusive decay width. So via the optical theorem, it is related to the imaginary part of forward scattering. And now if you insert here a complete set of states, you can see that you end up with what you're mostly interested, yes, the decay of X to some final, of a heavy particle to some final state X. And yeah, this is the thing behind it that makes it kind of work. So if you think about it, what this means, a heavy to heavy transition, in between you have a lot of the imaginary part of this heavy to heavy transition is given by all the contributions where you have intermediate states that are on shell. So if the B decays only to very light particles, the B has a large mass, then it just suddenly decays and all the energy from the mass is released. And if all the particles are light, they can be all energetic. And then they can go also on shell and you will have an imaginary part. And yes, this is depicted by this here. And then this is replaced usually by an operator production. The lowest dimension is this dimension 3, and then there will be dimension 5 contributions. The dimension 5 contributions you will find if you graduate of a soft blue one. And the dimension 4 contribution, the only where I think you can write down is this E bar ED / B, but this just gives you back the heavy quark mass. And then you're back to dimension 3. And if you would go through HQET, you must replace this B quark field by the heavy quark field. And then the heavy quark field is arranged such that we've factored out the heavy quark mass. So then the equation of motion would give you just zero. So the first contribution beyond dimension 3 is this dimension 5. And then it is given by this kind of operators in full QCD. So for the total width, we can perform an operator product expansion that contains dimension 3, dimension 5, and higher dimension. So this is on more general grounds what is behind this. What we did concretely for this B2C and UDK. And there are many applications of heavy quark expansion. So if you have a semi-leptonic charged current or also flavor-changing neutral current decays, then what we have seen is that the integration over this phase space of the lepton pair, for example, of the neutrino energy or also the lepton energies, it just somehow provides you a smearing over the invariant mass of the hydronic final state. So this, in this way, we kind of average over bound state effects of the individual hadrons. So the individual hadrons in between are maybe d meson, d pi, d pi pi. But by doing this phase space integration, we somehow average over all these things. And then the hypothesis of global quark hadron duality is that this averaging is equivalent to just calculating parton level. It's an assumption or an hypothesis. But in this context of semi-leptonic decays, where we have this additional particles that do not interact under QCD, and we talk about global quark hadron duality, because by integrating over their phase space, we somehow smear over all the individual bound state effects. So, yes, I don't know if this is helpful. And then non-leptonic decays. Here we don't have these additional particles that do not interact strongly. So we must assume that they are sufficiently many hadronic light states. So here, if you think in this picture, we need that there are many light states in between over which we sum and average. And in this case, one talks about local quark hadron duality. And these have been also applied for lifetime ratios of B mesons and also baryons to calculate them. Then this is also used to calculate the lifetime difference that appear in neutral meson mixing. So in neutral meson mixing, you have a B and a B bar, but if you go to mass eigenstates, you have a heavy and a light state. And each of the heavy and the light state, they have a slightly different decay width. And the difference of this decay width is the delta gamma. And you can have it for the B sub D and for the B sub S mesons. And these things are also measured and they are calculated with this heavy quark expansion. And then people also looked at hadronic processes like B going to CC bar and the strange final state. This is like B going to J psi K, J psi K star, and so on. The sum over all these states. So these are applications. Yes. And what you have in reality is that the experiments have to perform cuts on the phase space. So this averaging procedure maybe is invalidated that you need for the validity of the theoretical prediction. So if you in experiment introduce cuts, then the measured quantities do not really correspond to the theoretically calculated one. And this, yes, this brings in problems for most of this application, except maybe for B2 charm. So the one problem is, for example, if you look at B2XU inclusive, then there's a huge background from charm. And only at the very end of the spectrum, where the charm is cut off, where the phase space of the charm already ended, you can measure this one. without the background. So in this sense, this mirroring will be invalidated. That is necessary for our global quadrature duality to work. And then one has to resort to different approaches. So what people do, for example, for B2XU, is they use some soft collinear effective theory. And then they can reduce this matrix elements and they get other hadronic quantities, some matrix elements that are called shape functions. And what is interesting is, for example, that the same, if one does this at leading ordinate CT, the shape function that appears in B2XU also appears in B2XS gamma. So in principle, by measuring, for example, the photon energy spectrum in B2S gamma, one can learn something about the shape function and one could use it in B2XU to extract VUB or vice versa. So there are programs, theoretical approaches, programs that work with this SCT approach and to cope with this phase-based cuts that are done in experiment. And yes, so I don't know, the time is almost up. If you like, I can just show you the status of B2S gamma, for example. B2S gamma is really interesting because we can constrain this Wilson coefficient C7 of this dipole operator. And people have put a lot of effort here. Here also the problems arise because in the experimental measurements, they cannot measure the whole photon spectrum. So they can measure when the photon is very energetic, when it has an energy of almost MB half, and then a bit down, like I wrote it here, like from 2 to 1.7, but below that, there are two large backgrounds, so they cannot measure the rate there. And after that measurement, they extrapolate to lower photon energies. And this extrapolation is then used to compare with what we can calculate with heavy quark expansion. Yes, and this calculation is done to including higher orders, and there are some also non-perturbative parts that have been estimated, and the standard model predictions nowadays, they have a bit below 10% uncertainty for B2S and also for B2D. And the theorists also propose some or calculated something that is more closer to what is measured in experiment. Yes, and you can use this kind of measurements to constrain new physics scenarios. Yes. Yes, so let me conclude with that. So the last slide is just about B2S DLL. And here also we have a theory prediction from heavy quark expansion. And in the differential decay rate, you can measure it. Three different angular observables. So this HT and HL together, they give the branching fraction. And then this HA is related to the lepton forward backward asymmetry. And if this is measured at well, then we can learn something about these Wilson coefficients that enter this. So these are C9, C7, C10. And later today, we will hear more about this when we talk about this exclusive E2K star LL. But also here, for example, there's some problems with cuts. So at low energy Q squared, the experiments usually use some cuts on the invariant mass, the strange final state. So it's not completely to what is needed for proper heavy quark expansion prediction. And also there, people have tried to analyze this with this SCET soft collinear effective theory at the level of subleading shape functions. So this can then be combined also with B2S gamma and B2U LNU. And there's a whole theoretical program that they practically waiting for Bell to measure these things so they can use Bell data to extract subleading shape functions and learn something about these Wilson coefficients. And this is, for example, the Simba collaboration. So I think this is Florian Bernlochner and Zoltán Ligeti and Frank Tuckman and Katrin Tuckman. And then also Paolo Gambino. I think he's also working with collaborators on a similar idea. So with this, I would like to conclude.
Thank you, Christoph.